express my heartfelt gratitude really to Asifa for partnering for this event. We really are so happy that we were able to do something joint and really just expand our base, expand our reach, and we just want to help as many people as possible get the pre-perm inspiration, and I know it's a busy time for everyone, so really thank you for coming out, and thank you so, so much to the Cohens for hosting in this amazing space. We really, really appreciate it. And this year we sponsored just a few names for us to have in mind for Sposfar Learning: Rav Moshe Yoshua ben Rav Mordechai Eliezer, Malka Naomi Bas Rav David Moshe, Emmanuel Menachem ben Harav Alba, and also Leah Nishmas Esther Bas Yosef, Yehuda Shalom ben Esther, and as quest for the safety on the Shalom of all Chal Yisrael. Okay, so I'm going to start the recording. Everyone set? Just have to remember that. Thank you so much, Rabbi Schefter, for joining us.
Recording in progress.
Okay, perfect. We really, really appreciate Rabbi Schefter coming out all the way from the five towns to grace us with his Torah. We know he's really world-renowned, and his reach is very, very great online and in the general community, so we really are so appreciative for him coming out to share Torah with us tonight.
So thank you. It's such a schus to be here, and Bishus Rabbi Rothwax, it's such a pleasure to share the evening with you. I was nervous because I was told right before we started that there's going to be a break in between the two shiur. All the women are going to have a chance to mingle, and Rabbi Rothwax will come whenever he does. I wasn't sure what I would do. So I'm very thrilled that we're going to be able to hear each other tonight, and it's really a schus and a kavod. And really, first, before we begin, a mazel tov to your husband on the siyum that I was just on just a few minutes ago. Such a schus. I don't know if you saw, there were over 250 young boys who came to learn Mishnayos together and just made a siyum on Maseches Megillah, if I'm not mistaken. That was a real schus and a real treat to participate in that. I see I was not the only Schefter family member who was a part of it. My father participated as well, and a warm welcome to my mother who has joined us. And I thank her for bringing down the age group here in the Neshe of YU. So,
I brought it down.
That's what I said. So I'm happy that everyone is here. And if there's no room in the back, really, somebody can sit in the front. So welcome to everybody. Something very unusual about Megillas Esther is the words of the Rambam, where the Rambam tells us that Kol Sifrei HaNeviim VaHaKesuvim, that all of the Neviim, all the ones that we're familiar with, Yeshaya, Yechezkel, Yirmiyah, all the Neviim that we learn from all the time, all of them ultimately are going to become obsolete. They're all going to be irrelevant once Mashiach comes. Except for, writes the Rambam, Megillas Esther. That is the notable exception, where Megillas Esther will continue to be relevant even after Mashiach will appear, even after we will be back in Eretz Yisrael with a Geula and a Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam says that even though we're no longer going to recount on any of the terrible sorrows, any of the calamities that happened in all the generations that we had in Galus, in all of our experiences, this one, the story of Purim and Megillas Esther, is something that will be eternal, it will be everlasting. So much so, the Gemara writes in Maseches Megillah that there were Arba'im Ushmanu Neviim Ushiva Nevios. There were about 50 prophets in the history of the Jewish people, in the history of Klal Yisrael, and all of them, Lo Pichsu V'lo Hosiru, none of the Nevi'im ever dared to add any mitzvah to the mitzvah HaTorah. Whatever we have is what it is, and we're stuck in history. We did not add to the mitzvah HaTorah or take away from them. And the only exception is that Mordechai and Esther felt that it was appropriate for them to add the celebration of Purim. Okay, those who came in, three seats here in the front. So, I think the indication from that is that it seems that there's something very unique and deeply special about Megillas Esther. There's something that continues to be relevant. There's something that will always be relevant about Megillas Esther. It is something that, in some way, is eternal. It's immortal. It's everlasting. And sometimes in the busyness of this time of year, when we're thinking about Mishloach Manos and our costumes and Matanos Le'Evyonim and where we're going to have the Purim Suda and what we're going to make and how we're going to go about it, maybe we don't have the opportunity to really think, as we're listening to the Megillah, of something that we can take away, of something that we can learn from this experience of Purim and Megillas Esther. And that's what I want to focus on this evening, just briefly, for the next 25 minutes or so, till Rabbi Rothwax begins. And I want to share really just a short insight that I think is, in some way, an undertone of the entire story of the Megillah. So I find it fascinating every year when we have young children who dress up as Mordechai and Esther. And to us, it's so sweet and it's so cute. And the truth is, when you read the Megillah, the story and the image that we conjure up after reading what Mordechai and Esther actually lived through is not sweet or cute at all. Mordechai was the Rosh HaSanhedrin. So Rashi writes in Maseches Sanhedrin, in Maseches Bava Basra, Daf Tes Vav, that Mordechai was one of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Mordechai was one of the undisputed leaders of the Jewish community at the time. And although he was this incredible personality who was teaching the Jewish people, who was leading the Jewish people, who was a real celebrated figure of the time, Mordechai, as we know, put his life out on the line for the Jewish people. In the end of the Megillah, we're told that Mordechai was Ratzui L'Rov Echav. So if you just read that quickly, you get the impression that Mordechai was very beloved. Why? Because Mordechai was responsible for saving the Jewish people. But the Gemara says that this is really a critical line, that there were members of the generation that Mordechai lived in who were not so in favor of what he did at all. Ratzui L'Rov Echav, says the Gemara, means that most of the people liked him. So the Gemara asks, L'Rov Echav V'lo L'Chal Echav? Was there anybody in the Jewish community at the time who did not appreciate Mordechai? How could they not have appreciated who he was? He's the only reason why they were alive. He was the reason why they were saved. So how can it be Ratzui L'Rov Echav? And the Gemara says, Malamid Shapirshu Mimenu Miksas HaSanhedrin, that there were members of the Sanhedrin, some of his contemporaries, who distanced themselves from him. How can that be? Why? It's because Mordechai used to be completely engaged in Talmud Torah. Mordechai was one of the members of the Sanhedrin. He was one of the leaders, one of the great poskim of the generation. And then he got involved in politics, because he had to save the Jewish people. And there were some who were not in favor of the decisions that he made, and who felt that as a result of his being away from learning for so long, he was demoted. He was no longer considered as prominent a Talmud Chacham as he once was. And therefore, Ratzui L'Rov Echav, Mordechai paid a tremendous price for his involvement, for his engagement on behalf of the Jewish people, which is a tragedy. But I ask you, is there anybody else whose name you're familiar with from the entire period in history of Mordechai and Esther, other than the two of them? So Mordechai pays a tremendous price. And Mordechai makes the ultimate sacrifice, his own reputation, his own standing in the community, his own popularity, and everything about him goes down as a result of what he did. But history has shown us who was right. History has shown us that Mordechai is the one who, in fact, was the hero of the Purim story. And this really is a very special attribute about Mordechai. But now I want to shift our attention just a little bit to the story of Esther. So Esther, I would have to imagine, grew up in the Frum community like everyone else in that time period. And we're told that the Jewish community had pockets, Nikalu HaYudim Ba'arehem, right? They had Jewish communities that were scattered about throughout HaMelech HaChashverosh. He was in charge of all these communities. But the Jewish people at the time were not living in Eretz Yisrael. They were in Galus. Most of the Jews did not go back with Ezra to build the Beis HaMikdash. So here you have Esther is growing up in a religious community. I would imagine if you would just envision to yourself what kind of person she probably was a day school graduate or some kind of Beis Yaakov that she went to, a sweet, innocent young woman who has beautiful midos, who happens to be married to the Gadol Hador. So she's the Rebbetzin par excellence, and she's living that kind of life, and she's a very celebrated woman. And then suddenly the word goes out that every woman in town has to present themselves to Mordechai, to Ahasuerus, after he kills his wife Vashti. Now, the Gemara says that each of those women was offered all kinds of makeup and skin treatments and whatever it is that would make them more appealing to Ahasuerus, and every woman accepted that. There was one exception. Esther was not interested. The furthest thing from what she wanted was to be a part of this story with Ahasuerus. Why would a married Jewish religious woman want to end up in the palace of Ahasuerus being married to a non-Jewish king? So much so, the Gemara says, Esther Yirak Rakas Haisa. So, simply translated, it means she had a green complexion. I assume it's not what it means. It probably means she was not very appealing in the way that she looked, and yet, of all people, she should have been the one to be rejected immediately. And obviously, we're all familiar with the story that she is accepted by Ahasuerus, she is beloved, she was no sechein be'enav, And Ahasuerus chooses her completely unexpectedly. This is something that was the most improbable of circumstances, and yet Esther is the one who's chosen. So Ahasuerus is this irrational madman. Ahasuerus is this impulsive hothead who decided to murder his wife when he was uncomfortable with the decision that she made. So here you have Esther, who's probably living in dire fear that the same way the last wife of Ahasuerus was murdered, it's probably going to be the outcome of me as well. What's to make me feel any differently? Why should I feel safe here? And yet, she goes into this marriage. What else is she supposed to do? She is coerced. She is forced to go into this marriage with Ahasuerus. And then at some point, Mordechai gives her a message and says, don't ever, Ein Esther Magedes Moladeta, don't ever disclose your identity. Do not share with Ahasuerus where you come from, who you're affiliated with, what your community is all about. So can you imagine, anybody here in the field of psychology? Imagine you have somebody who comes and is living this double life. You'd have a lot of work to do, right? So you have somebody who is not only living a double life, not only leaving everything behind, totally disconnected from their past, and having no connection to that anymore at all, even if they wanted to. But on top of that, being careful never to disclose what my identity is, who I'm friendly with, where I'm from. I would have to imagine that every so often, Esther and Ahasuerus probably sit down to have dinner together, and Ahasuerus must turn to her and say, you know, our dating process was a little rushed. We never really had a chance to get to know each other. I'm curious, so where did you grow up? I have memory loss. I'm not exactly sure. So did you ever go to school? No, I was homeschooled. Did you have parents? Who taught you? My parents actually died when I was very young. I have no recollection. So who raised you? I don't know. I was an orphan. I was a foster child. I was taken in under somebody else's care. Did they have a name? It's slipping my mind. I can't remember. So did you ever have any friends? You ever went anywhere on vacation? You ever did anything? When you were in school, did you have classmates? No, it's really, my memory is failing me. I just can't remember anything. So how many times can you sell that story to Ahasuerus and actually consider it to be a plausible narrative? And yet, that's what she does. Every single day when she's with Ahasuerus, she's living this double life, hiding her identity, making sure never to disclose who she really is, trying her best to navigate all of this reality that is so impossible for her to navigate. And then in the Megillah, we see that a major turning point. You'll notice that in the Megillah, as we read it, there are a number of psukim that are read in the tune of Eicha. So one of the psukim that we read in the tune of Eicha is, Kasher Avadati, Avadati. And what is that significance of that line? Why is it read in the tune of Eicha? So Chazal tell us the reason why it's read in a sad tone is because this was the turning point. Esther was saying to herself all along as somehow I'll get out of this mess, I'll finally put this chapter of my life behind me. It was a tragic, horrific story. I had to end up living with Ahasuerus. It was a terrible time in my life. But at least I'll go back to my community. I'll be reunited with my husband. After all, the halacha is that a woman who is an anusa, a woman who is not interested in being engaged in a relationship on her own volition, even if she's an Eishes Ish, she's allowed to go back to her husband after the incident happens. But here, Esther says to herself, this is the first time in her life that she's being asked to willingly offer herself to Ahasuerus. That means she's willingly engaging in an illicit relationship that she's not allowed to be in. Which means the implication is that should she ever miraculously get out of this problem, she can never go back to her own husband. And that's a tragedy. Kasher Avadati Avadati is the saddest moment of the Megillah, where Esther is not only disconnected from her community and her past and her family, but she realizes that even in the future, should things change, should the circumstances be different, I will never again be allowed to go back to my husband. And that is a tragic time in her life. It's a tragic moment. In fact, there are beautiful tshuvas written today asking whether or not the Mossad has a right to do what we refer to as a honey trap. Is the Mossad allowed to take Jewish Orthodox religious women who are married and set them up with an Arab to get information out of them? It's discussed, and all the sources come down to the story of Esther Hamalka. Was it justified what she did? And can we extrapolate from her story to the modern day situation that we're faced with, whether or not a woman would be allowed to do that. But understand that if a woman willingly does that, she's potentially sacrificing her own marriage and her own future. If that wasn't bad enough, then now she's forlorn, she's foregone by her community, by her husband, and by everything she knew in her past. At least she feels Ahava Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the Medrash tells us that as Esther is going into the inner sanctum, into the chambers of Ahasuerus, to go and negotiate on behalf of the people, so we're told that Kivin Shehigiyah LeBeis HaTzlamim, in the palace there was a room that was designated as the Beis Avodah Zarah. That's where Ahasuerus had all of his idols, that's where he used to pray and worship. As she's passing that room, so the Medrash tells us, Nistalka Haymena Ruach HaKodesh, even the Ribono Shel Olam left her at that moment. And she begins to cry and she says, Keli, Keli, Lama Azavtani. How have you left me? How could it be? My whole community is gone. I have nothing left in my life. I'm all alone. I have nobody to help navigate. At least I was holding on to the comfort of having the Ribono Shel Olam. And now I realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has left me as well. And this is a devastating moment. And Esther begins to say, the Medrash tells us, she contrasts herself with Sarah Imenu. She says Sarah was only taken for one night, and somehow she was violated, not so violated. Rashi on Chumash says nothing really happened, but whatever it was, she was captured for one night. And for that, you see the response of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He stood up for the dignity of Sarah, and he made sure that they well understood what they had done wrong. And she says, here I am, stuck with Ahasuerus, Kol Hashanim Halalu, all these years. And it's almost as if God doesn't even notice. God doesn't care. I don't matter. He's not with me anymore. Keli, Keli, Lama Azavtani. So you ask yourself, when somebody is living through this kind of tragedy, when somebody is living through this kind of impossible situation, so what strength do they have to do what Esther actually accomplished, to do what she did? And I think perhaps the answer can be in that very phrase that the Medrash says. Keli, Keli, Lama Azavtani was the response, that was the reaction of Esther HaMalka, when she realizes that she is completely alone, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has left her, along with everything else in her life that is no longer a part of her. Rav Hirsch writes in a totally different context, I think it's in Parshas Kisisa. He does not make the connection here, but I think it's an obvious connection. Rav Hirsch writes often in his commentary on Chumash, he will take a word and the etymology of a word and he'll change it around, the spelling, the meaning a little bit, and he'll give a totally different interpretation to something that on face value means something completely different. But here Rav Hirsch says that sometimes we can take the word lama and we can change it to be lema. And he does not give it in the context of this pasuk, but I think it's an obvious understanding from what he writes. And perhaps a person has an option when they're faced with an impossible situation. So we are always given that option to spend the rest of our lives asking all those questions of lama this and lama that, and why is it fair, and it doesn't seem right, and where's the justice in the world, and how could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does this to his people, and how is it possible that I of all people am stuck in this horrific circumstance? We can spend our entire lives asking these questions, and they are very legitimate questions, very often. But says Rav Hirsch, we have the opportunity to make a different choice, to shift the perspective just a little bit, and instead of asking lama all the time, we have the ability to also choose to ask lima azavtani. What is my mission? What is my purpose? What is my goal? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu put me here? And perhaps that's what gave Esther the courage to do what needed to be done. She was in the most horrific of circumstances, but she just shifted her perspective, her mindset a little bit with the encouragement of Mordechai, and asked herself, what is my purpose? What is my mission? And what is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from me? The Ribono Shel Olam believes in all of us. There are so many who don't have the gift of life the way we have it. There are so many who don't have the opportunity to contribute in any meaningful way. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to ask ourselves all the time, what is our mission? What is our goal? What's our purpose? What's the objective? Why did He give me another day of life? Why am I here? And with that perspective, Esther has the ability to change her whole dream and aspiration of what it is that can come out of this horrific set of circumstances. It should be of no coincidence You know, this is exactly what Mordechai tells her. That if you don't understand, this is your moment, this is your mission, this is your purpose. It has to be your goal. And if you miss it, the Jewish people won't lose out. They'll be fine. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will save the Jewish people some other way. But you will be a forgotten personality in history. Because your mission, your purpose is exactly this. And don't fail HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the mission that He has put you in this world for. So the Gemara tells us that Shaul HaMelech was one of the greatest people that ever lived. In fact, when we're introduced to Shaul HaMelech, we're told, Ben Shana Shaul Ben Malcho. Shaul was 1 year old when he took over the mantle of leadership, and you ask yourself, he may have been extremely mature, well beyond his years, but 1 year old? How was he running a country, a community? How was he the leader of the Jewish people? It's impossible. How can it be that Shaul HaMelech was 1 year old? And the Gemara answers, I think it's in Maseches Yuma, that what it means is, Kiven Shana Lechet. Just like you have a one-year-old child who is so innocent and so sweet and can do no wrong, you don't blame them for anything. They don't know how to do wrong. Shaul HaMelech was the same. He was an innocent, sweet person, even though he was an adult, even though he was very mature. But Shaul HaMelech was a perfect personality. And then you read the story that we just read this past Shabbos in Parsha Zachar. We say the Haftorah, which I think, Rabbi Ruthwax, you can correct me, I think it's one of the most tragic stories in all of Tanakh. The story of Shaul HaMelech is such a tragedy. So you read the story about this tzaddik, this perfect personality, this amazing individual. And he is anointed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be the one who's the Bechir Hashem. The Psukim say that he is the choice candidate, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have wanted anybody else to be the Melech al Yisrael. Who else would you want other than Shaul HaMelech? He's the greatest. So he's chosen to be the Melech al Yisrael. He's given one instruction, and that is, Leich v'hikisa as Amalek. Your job is, as the leader of the Jewish people, to wipe out evil from the world, to wipe out Amalek. And Shaul HaMelech actually does the job quite effectively. He pretty much wipes out Amalek 99.5% of the way, and he leaves over just a little bit. And he has a whole justification to explain why he did it. It's not because he was being negligent. It's not because he wanted to do anything malicious. He had a good reason why he chose not to do the last part, but everything else he listened to. And suddenly Shmuel is approached. Shmuel is the Navi at the time, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wakes Shmuel up in the middle of the night, and he says, I need you to go immediately to have a conversation with Shaul and tell him that he's no longer to be the king over the Jewish people. Shmuel is shocked. What do you mean? Just very recently we anointed Shaul HaMelech as the king. You referred to him as the Bechir Hashem. What happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, he didn't listen to me. I needed to go talk to him. And he comes, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Nichamti ki himlachti es Shaul. I made a mistake. I feel horrible over the fact that I have chosen Shaul to be the king over the Jewish people. And Shmuel goes and he shares this message with Shaul HaMelech. And he tells him, Vayimascha Hashem lemelech al Yisrael, Ma'astas devar Hashem, Vayimascha Hashem lemelech, over and over again, he's just grilling him. Kara Hashem es mamlachtecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given up on you, forget it, you're no longer the king. V'nasan, and he has given it, L'reyacha ato mimecha. Not just he's taken it away from you, he gave it to someone who's far better than you. You're a nobody, you're a nothing. You're worthless. And it's such a strong, such a severe reaction. Hard to understand. So the Gemara asks, I don't understand. Let's contrast for a moment two great personalities. Who takes over after Shaul HaMelech? David. Right? So David HaMelech, also a righteous person. So the Gemara says, 1 second, let's try to review for a moment the story of David HaMelech's life and see whether it matches up with Shaul. Says the Gemara, Shaul ba'achas, Shaul makes one mistake. And for that one mistake that he made, which was a tiny fraction of a mistake, as a result of that, Kara Hashem es mamlachtecha, Vayimascha Hashem lemelech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is disgusted by him, despicable personality, he gets rid of him, he puts somebody else in his place. Slow down a minute, says the Gemara. How many mistakes did David HaMelech make in his life? Says the Gemara, David chata b'shtayim. David seemingly did two things wrong, not just things wrong. Imagine you had a personality today who sets his eyes on a married woman in his own community and decides he has to marry her, but of course she's an Acer sister. What am I going to do? I'm going to send her husband out to battle. I'm going to make sure he's killed. I mean, what kind of idea is this? How did David HaMelech come up with all of this? And yet, he gets away with it. David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. David is the eternal king of the Jewish people. So ask the Gemara, how can it be? Shaul HaMelech makes one mistake, and he loses everything as a result of that mistake. David HaMelech Chata B'Shtayim, and somehow he continues to be the Melech HaYisrael. How can that be? So there are many suggestions that are given to explain this answer, this difference, and this comparison, this contrast. But the Vilna Gaon is quoted as saying by the Chayei Adam, he writes that perhaps the answer is, it's not about making a mistake. Ki hu yada yitzreinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows he created all of us. He knows that we make mistakes, and it's okay to make a mistake. In fact, the Medrash tells us that before man was created, the possibility of tshuva was already created, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew we can't be perfect. He knows the reality of life. This was not a secret. Mistakes are okay. The problem here was that this is not about a mistake and doing tshuva. David made mistakes. He did tshuva for his mistakes. He moved on with life. The problem, Shaul HaMelech, was this was your defining moment of life. This was your purpose, your entire mission of life. God put you in this place because He wanted you to do this one thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked you to do something. It's not that you didn't listen to Him. It's that your entire dream and aspiration that the Ribono Shel Olam had set out for you in life was this moment. And you missed it. There's no tshuva for that. Moments like that never come back. And it is that great tragedy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you've missed your moment, if this is what you're here on the world, on the earth for, and you've missed that opportunity and that possibility of rising to your moment and understanding that this is the gravity of the moment that is in front of you, and this is why I'm here, those moments never come back. It's not about making a mistake. It's about understanding and appreciating. We read this story right before Purim. It's a tragic story. We read it obviously because of Amalek, because it's the story that is connected to Parsha Zachar that we read. But we read it also for another reason, because Mordechai, as he's introduced to us in the Megillah, is Ben Ya'ir, Ben Shim'i, Ben Kish, Ish Yemini. And the Medrash says, who is this lineage, Ben Kish Ish Yemini? This was from the family of Shaul HaMelech. Mordechai's whole objective in the Megillah was to be misaking the horrific mistake of Shaul HaMelech who came before him. It was to make sure that people never miss their moment of opportunity again. And this is the message that he gives over to Esther. Don't forget, Mi Yodeam La'ez Kazos Higat La'Malchus. I come from a family where I know what happens when somebody misses their moment. Shaul HaMelech was my ancestor. He made that mistake, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away his entire life from him. The Ribono Shel Olam stripped him of all the privileges that he had as Melech. What we need to make sure that we do now, Mordechai instructs Esther, is understand and appreciate the gravity of the moment in history that we live in. Understand that there's something that we can do as a nation, that we can do as individuals. There's something that is expected of us, and if we miss that moment, it is not a tragedy for the generation. The generation will survive. They'll be okay. Revach v'hatzelah yamu la'yehudim mimakom acher. They'll be fine. But at ubeis avich tov edun, you will never have an opportunity again to make up that missed mission, that missed goal, that aspiration that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had for you. Every year when we read the Megillah, I always think about that pasuk. Mi yodea im la'ez kazos higat la'malchus. All of us are in our own circumstance and situation in life. So everybody has their own way of interpreting that pasuk based on where they're up to. But we all have opportunities. And we all have a mission. And we all have a purpose. It's hard to sometimes really figure out what that mission and purpose is. But as we read the story of Esther HaMalka, the tikkun of Mordechai for that which Shaul did wrong, for that terrible mistake, for that lost opportunity that never repeated itself again in the lifetime of Shaul, we can all think as we read that story and we recount what happened in last week's Haftorah, what is about to happen with Esther and Mordechai, and the incredible courage that it took for them to do what needed to be done. It's an opportunity for us to look inward and ask ourselves, are we doing the same? There are moments in our lives where we are called upon to do certain things, and sometimes it may be uncomfortable, and sometimes it's not something that we've ever experienced before, and sometimes it's something that we never expected. But it might very well be our defining moment in our mission and our purpose, and the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us here. And we pledge, as we read the Megillah, and we remind ourselves of this amazing story of defiance of Mordechai, this amazing story of bravery and courage of Esther Amalka, that we too have the same ability to do the same. We can also take advantage of opportunities that are put in our way. We can take advantage and we can make the most of them to make our mission, our goal, and our purpose fulfilled. So I thank all of you for coming. I want to just give it over to Rabbi Rothwax. It's such a pleasure to share with you. And Mirtz Hashem, I wish everybody a Freilich and Purim. We should come together for many happy things, many future occasions as well. And Rabbi Rothwax, are we taking a break
first?
Thank
you so much. I'll stop the recording. Rabbi Rothwax is ready now.
Yeah.
We'll come right
no
in.
Break,
thank
no
you.
Break.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Unless someone could maybe...